Chapter 15. The Instrumentarian Collective. So an age ended, and its last deliverer died in bed, grown idle and unhappy. They were safe. Then sudden shadow of a giant's enormous calf would fall no more at dusk across their lawns outside. W. H. Auden, Sonnets from China, 10. 1. The Priests of Instrumentarian Power. Applied utopianist executives such as Page, Nadella, and Zuckerberg do not say much about their theories. At best, the information we have is episodic and shallow. But a cadre of data scientists and computational social scientists has leapt into this void with detailed experimental and theoretical accounts of the gathering momentum of instrumentarian power, providing invaluable insight into the social principles of an instrumentarian society. One outstanding example is the work of Alex Pentland, the director of the Human Dynamics Lab within MIT's Media Lab. Pentland is the rare applied utopianist who, in collaboration with his students and collaborators, has vigorously articulated, researched, and disseminated a theory of instrumentarian society in parallel to his prolific technical innovations and practical applications. The studies that this group has produced are a contemporary signal of an increasingly taken-for-granted worldview among data scientists whose computational theories and innovations exist in dynamic interaction with the progress of surveillance capitalism, as in the case of Picard's effective computing and Paradiso's digital omniscience. However, few consider the social ramifications of their work with Pentland's insight and conviction, providing us with an invaluable opportunity to critically explore the governance assumptions, societal principles, and social processes that define an instrumentarian society. My aim is to infer the theory behind the practice, as surveillance capitalists integrate society as a first-class object for rendition, computation, modification, monetization, and control. Pentland is a prolific author or co-author of hundreds of articles and research studies in the field of data science, and is a prominent institutional actor who advises a roster of organizations, including the World Economic Forum, the Data Pop Alliance, Google, Nissan, Telefonica, and the Office of the United Nations Secretary General. Pentland's research lab is funded by a who's who of global corporations, consultancies, and governments: Google, Cisco, IBM, Deloitte, Twitter, Verizon, the EU Commission, the US government, the Chinese government, and various entities who are all concerned with why we don't know what's going on in the world. Although Pentland is not alone in this field, he is something of a high priest among an exclusive group of priests. Unlike Hal Varian, Pentland does not speak of Google in the first-person plural, but his work is showcased in surveillance capitalist enclaves, where it provides the kind of material and intellectual support that helps to legitimate instrumentarian practices. Appearing for a presentation at Google, where Pentland is on the advisory board for the Advanced Technology and Projects Group, former Pentland doctoral student and top Google executive Brad Horowitz introduced his mentor as an inspirational educator with credentials across many disciplines and whose former students lead the computational sciences in theory and practice. Pentland is often referred to as the godfather of wearables, especially Google Glass. In 1998, he predicted that wearables can extend one's senses, improve memory, aid the wearer's social life, and even help him or her stay calm and collected. Thad Starner, one of Pentland's doctoral students, developed a primitive wearable device while at MIT and was hired by Sergey Brin in 2010 to continue that work at Google, a project that produced Google Glass. More than 50 of Pentland's doctoral students have gone on to spread the instrumentarian vision in top universities, in industry research groups, and in 30 companies in which Pentland participates as co-founder, sponsor, or advisor. Each one applies some facet of Pentland's theory, analytics, and inventions to real people in organizations and cities. Pentland's academic credentials and valuable intelligence help legitimate a social vision that repelled and alarmed intellectuals, public officials, and the general public just decades ago. Most noteworthy is that Pentland completes Skinner, fulfilling his social vision with big data, ubiquitous digital instrumentation, advanced mathematics, sweeping theory, numerous esteemed co-authors, institutional legitimacy, lavish funding, and corporate friends in high places, without having attracted the worldwide backlash, moral revulsion, and naked vitriol once heaped on Harvard's outspoken behaviorist. This fact alone suggests the depth of psychic numbing to which we have succumbed and the loss of our collective bearings. Like Skinner, Pentland is a designer of utopias and a lofty thinker, quick to generalize from animals to the entire arc of humanity. He is also a hands-on architect of instrumentarianism's practical architecture and computational challenges. Pentland refers to his theory of society as social physics, a conception that confirms him as this century's B.F. Skinner by way of Planck, Meyer, and McKay. And although Pentland never mentions the old behaviorist, Pentland's book, Social Physics, summons Skinner's social vision into the 21st century, now fulfilled by the instruments that eluded Skinner in his lifetime. Pentland validates the instrumentarian impulse with research and theory that are boldly grounded in Skinner's moral reasoning and epistemology as captured by the viewpoint of the other one. Professor Pentland began his intellectual journey, as Skinner did, in the study of animal behavior. Where Skinner trained his reasoning on the detailed behaviors of blameless individual creatures, Pentland concerned himself with the gross behavior of animal populations. As a part-time researcher at NASA's Environmental Research Institute while still an undergraduate, he developed a method for assessing the Canadian beaver population from space by counting the number of beaver ponds. You're watching the lifestyle and you get an indirect measure. The experience appears to have hooked Pentland on the distant, detached gaze, which he would later embrace as the God's eye view. You may have experienced the sensation of the God view from the window seat of an airplane as it lifts you above the city, transforming all the joys and woes below into the mute bustle of an anthill. Up there, any sense of we quickly dissolves into the viewpoint of the other one, and it is this angle of observation that founded Pentland's science as he learned to apply McKay's principles of remote observation and telestimulation to humans. If you think about people across the room talking, you can tell a lot. It's like watching beavers from outer space, like Jane Goodall watching gorillas. You observe from a distance. This is a slur on Goodall, of course, whose seminal genius was her ability to understand the gorillas she studied not as other ones, but rather as one of us. The God view would come to be essential to the conception of instrumentarian society, but a comprehensive picture emerged gradually over years of piecemeal experimentation. In the following section, we track that journey as Pentland and his students learned to render, measure, and compute social behavior. With that foundation, we turn to Pentland's social physics, which aims to recast society as an instrumentarian hive mind, like Nadella's machines, but now extensively theorized and deeply evocative of Skinner's formulations, values, worldview, and vision of the human future. 2. When Big Other Eats Society, the Rendition of Social Relations. Skinner bitterly lamented the absence of instruments and methods for the study of human behavior comparable to those available to physicists. As if in response, Pentland and his students have spent the last 2 decades determined to invent the instruments and methods that can transform all of human behavior, especially social behavior, into highly predictive math. An early milestone was a 2002 collaboration with then-doctoral student Tanzeem Chowdhury, in which the co-authors wrote, "As far as we know, there are currently no available methods to automatically model face-to-face interactions. This absence is probably due to the difficulty of obtaining reliable measurements from real-world interactions within a community. We believe sensing and modeling physical interactions among people is an untapped resource." In other words, the social remained an elusive domain even as data and computers had become more commonplace. The researchers' response was to introduce the sociometer, a wearable sensor that combines a microphone, accelerometer, Bluetooth connection, analytic software, and machine learning techniques designed to infer the structure and dynamic relationships in human groups. Chowdhury would eventually run the People Aware Computing Group at Cornell University. From that point onward, Pentland and his teams have worked to crack the code on the instrumentation and instrumentalization of social processes in the name of a totalistic social vision founded on a comprehensive means of behavior modification. A 2005 collaboration with doctoral student Nathan Eagle reiterated the problem of insufficient data on human society, noting the bias, sparsity of data, and lack of continuity in social sciences' understanding of human behavior, and the resulting absence of dense, continuous data that also hinders the machine learning and agent-based modeling communities from constructing more comprehensive predictive models of human dynamics. Pentland had insisted that even the relatively new field of data mining could not capture the real action of conversations and face-to-face interactions necessary for a trenchant and comprehensive grasp of social behavior. But he also recognized that a rapidly growing swath of human activity, from transactions to communication, was falling to computer mediation, largely as a result of the cell phone. The team saw that it would be possible to exploit the increasingly ubiquitous infrastructure of mobile phones and combine those data with new streams of information from their wearable behavioral monitors. The result was a radical new solution that Pentland and Eagle called reality mining. Mentor and student demonstrated how the data from cell phones can be used to uncover regular rules and structure in the behavior of both individuals and organizations, thus furthering the progress of behavioral surplus capture and analysis and pointing the way toward the larger shift in the nature of behavioral dispossession from virtual to actual to social experience. As a technological and cultural landmark, the researchers' announcement that reality was now fair and feasible game for surplus capture, search, extraction, rendition, datafication, analysis, prediction, and intervention helped to forge a path toward the new practices that would eventually become the reality business. Pentland and Eagle began with 100 MIT students and faculty centered at the Media Lab, equipping them with 100 Nokia phones preloaded with special software in a project that would become the basis of Eagle's doctoral dissertation. The two researchers exposed the revelatory power of continuously harvested behavioral data, which they validated with survey information collected directly from each participant. Their analyses produced detailed portraits of individual and group life, the social system, as the authors called it. They were able to specify regular, temporal, and spatial patterns of location, activity, and communication use patterns, which together enabled predictions of up to 90% accuracy regarding where someone was likely to be and what that person was likely to be doing within the hour, as well as highly accurate predictions about an individual's colleagues, casual friends, and close relationships. The team identified patterns of communication and interaction within work groups, as well as the broad organizational rhythms and network dynamics of the Media Lab. Eagle became CEO of Jana, a mobile advertising company that offers free internet to emerging markets in exchange for behavioral surplus. As the theory and practice of reality mining continued to evolve in Pentland's lab, work projects, and theories, the MIT Technology Review singled out reality mining as one of its 10 breakthrough technologies in 2008. My students and I have created two behavior measurement platforms to speed the development of this new science, Pentland said. These platforms today produce vast amounts of quantitative data for hundreds of research groups around the world. This allegiance to speed is, as we know, not a casual description, but rather a key element in the art and science of applied utopistics. Pentland understands the rapid encroachments of Big Other and instrumentarian power as a light-speed, hyper-connected world where virtual crowds of millions from anywhere in the world can form in minutes. He views the MIT community as the avant-garde, brilliant pioneers of light-speed, already in sync with its extreme velocities, and thus a model for the rest of society. Reflecting on his students and colleagues, Pentland writes that, "I have also gotten to see how creative cultures must change in order to thrive in the hyper-connected, warp-speed world that is MIT, an environment that the rest of the world is now entering." Pentland reasons that his group's adaptation to MIT's norms of rapid deployment simply foreshadows what is in store for the rest of us. In the MIT Technology Review's enthusiastic 2008 tribute to reality mining, it noted the then-still new and disturbing facts of behavioral surplus. Some people are nervous about trailing digital breadcrumbs behind them. Sandy Pentland, however, revels in it. Pentland would like to see phones collect even more information about their users. It's an interesting God's-eye view. Indeed, Pentland regularly celebrates the predictive power of digital breadcrumbs in his articles, indulging in the euphemisms and thin rationalizations that are also standard fare for surveillance capitalists and that contribute to the normalization of the dispossession of human experience. He says, for example, "As we go about our daily lives, we leave behind virtual breadcrumbs, digital records of the people we call, the places we go, the things we eat, and the products we buy. These breadcrumbs tell a more accurate story of our lives than anything we choose to reveal about ourselves. Digital breadcrumbs record our behavior as it actually happened." Pentland was among the first to recognize the commercial relevance of behavioral surplus. Although he does not discuss it explicitly, he appears to embrace the realpolitik of surveillance capitalism as the necessary condition for an instrumentarian society. Pentland's own companies are extensions of his applied utopistics, proving grounds for instrumentarian techniques and the habituation of populations to pervasive rendition, monitoring, and modification in pursuit of surveillance revenues. From the start, Pentland understood reality mining as the gateway to a new universe of commercial opportunities. In 2004, he asserted that cell phones and other wearable devices with computational horsepower would provide the foundation for reality mining as an exciting new suite of business applications. The idea was always that businesses could use their privileged grasp of reality to shape behavior toward maximizing business objectives. He describes new experimental work in which speech recognition technology generated profiles of individuals based on the words they use, thus enabling a manager to form a team of employees with harmonious social behavior and skills. In their 2006 article, Pentland and Eagle explained that their data would be of significant value in the workplace, and the two jointly submitted a patent for a combined short-range radio network and cellular telephone network for interpersonal communications that would add to the stock of instruments available for businesses to mine reality. Eagle told Wired that year that the reality mining study represented an unprecedented data set about continuous human behavior that would revolutionize the study of groups and offer new commercial applications. He was reported to be in talks with a large company that already wanted to apply his instruments and methods. Pentland argued that information gathered by his sociometers, unobtrusive wearable sensors measuring communication, voice tones, and body language, could help managers understand who is working with whom and infer the relationships between colleagues, and would be an efficient way to find people who might work well together. In a 2009 collaboration with several graduate students, Pentland presented results on the design and deployment of a wearable computing platform based on the sociometric badge and its machine analytics. The goal, the authors said, was to make machines that can monitor social communication and provide real-time intervention. To that end, 22 office employees were instrumented with the badge for 1 month in order to automatically measure individual and collective patterns of behavior, predict human behavior from unconscious social signals, identify social affinity among individuals working in the same team, and enhance social interactions by providing feedback to the users of our system. The research provided credible results, revealing patterns of communication and behavior that the authors concluded would not be available without the use of a device such as the sociometric badge. Our results argue strongly for the use of automatic sensing data collection tools to understand social systems. They warned that organizations will become truly sensible only when they employ hundreds or thousands of wireless environmental and wearable sensors capable of monitoring human behavior, extracting meaningful information, and providing managers with group performance metrics and employees with self-performance evaluations and recommendation. The 2002 invention was continuously elaborated and eventually shepherded from lab to market. In 2010, Pentland and his 2009 co-authors founded a company, Sociometric Solutions, to bring Skinner's longed-for instruments and methods to the marketplace. It was one of many companies that Pentland would create to apply the rigors of his social physics to captive populations of office workers. Sociometric Solutions CEO Ben Weber, one of Pentland's doctoral students, called his operation People Analytics, and in his book of the same name, he anticipates a future of connection, collaboration, and data with the badge, or something like it, deployed across millions of individuals at different companies in countries all over the world for not minutes, but years or decades. Imagine what we could learn about to help people collaborate more effectively. Pentland and his crew continued to develop the sociometer and its applications, and by 2013, the device had been used by dozens of research groups and companies, including members of the Fortune 1000. A 2014 study, authored with Weber and colleagues from Harvard and Northeastern University, quantified gender differences in interaction patterns. The success of the analysis occasioned this announcement. It is now possible to actively instrument human behavior to collect detailed data on various dimensions of social interaction. The authors signaled their aim to employ McKay's cardinal rule of unobtrusive surveillance for effective monitoring of herds, flocks, and packs, acknowledging that the continuous pervasive collection of human behavioral data could succeed only when conducted outside the boundaries of human awareness, thus eliminating possible resistance, just as we saw at Facebook. As the researchers enthused, electronic sensors can be used to complement or replace human observers altogether, and while they may convey a slight sense of surveillance, this perception is likely reduced as sensors get smaller and smaller, and consequently less obtrusive. They concluded that minimally invasive ways to instrument human behavior would enable comprehensive data collection in naturalistic settings. By 2015, the company opted for euphemism in a rebranding effort, changing its name to Humanize. Its technology is described as a platform that uses a smart employee badge to collect employee behavioral data, which it links to specific metrics with the goal of improving business performance. Weber portrays the work as moneyball for business, enabling any organization to manage its workers like a sports team, based on measures that reveal how people move through the day, with whom they interact, their tone of voice, if they lean in to listen, their position in the social network across a variety of office situations, and much more. All of it to produce 40 separate measures that are then integrated with a business metric dashboard. The company does not identify its client organizations, although one account describes its work with 10,000 employees in Bank of America's customer service centers and a partnership with the consulting firm Deloitte. Writing in Scientific American on the power of sociometric data, Pentland says, "I persuaded the manager of a Bank of America call center to schedule coffee breaks simultaneously. The goal was to promote more engagement between employees. This single change resulted in a productivity increase of $15 million a year." Of the 19 commercial ventures currently listed in Pentland's MIT biography, many are surveillance-as-a-service companies. For example, Pentland co-founded Endor, which markets itself to business customers as a solution to the prediction imperative. Endor's website explains its origins in the revolutionary new science of social physics, combined with a proprietary technology to produce a powerful engine that is able to explain and predict any sort of human behavior. The site explains that every human activity, for example, phone call records, credit card purchases, taxi rides, web activity, contains a set of hidden mathematical patterns. On the strength of its analysis, emerging behavioral patterns can be detected before they can be observed by any other technique. "We've been working with some of the world's top consumer brands to unravel the most demanding of data problems." In 2014, another Pentland company called Sense Networks was acquired by YP, two letters that once stood for Yellow Pages, and now describe North America's largest local search, media, and advertising company connecting consumers with local businesses. The 2014 YP statement on its acquisition of Sense Networks portrays a familiar picture of the behavioral surplus land grab, describing the firm as a sophisticated location data processing platform to deliver mobile audiences at scale. Sense's retargeting solution for retailers can identify and reach shoppers and prospects of the top retailers with relevant mobile ads when they are near the retailer, at home or work. Pentland understands his experiments and paid interventions in workplace settings as emblematic of the larger challenges of social relations in an instrumentarian society. Once again, we see the intended path from the economic to the social domain. Those instrumented office workers function as living labs for the translation of instrumentarian relations to the wider society. Pentland appeared in 2016 at a conference organized by Singularity University, a Silicon Valley hub of instrumentarian ideology, funded in part by Larry Page. An interviewer tasked to write about Pentland explains, "Though people are one of the most valuable assets in an organization, many companies are still approaching management with a 20th century mentality. Pentland saw the factor that was always messing things up was the people." Like Nadella, Pentland described his aims as developing the social systems that would work along the same lines as the machine systems, using behavioral data flows to judge the correctness of action patterns and to intervene when it is necessary to change bad action to correct action. "If people aren't interacting correctly and information isn't spreading correctly," Pentland warns, "people make bad decisions. What you're trying to do is make a human-machine symbiote, where the humans understand more about the network of interactions because of the computers, and the computers are able to understand more about how humans work." As the interviewer notes, Pentland has found this data from sociometric badges goes a long way in helping organizations mend their broken behaviors. Pentland's vision of an instrumentarian society grew in proportion to his instruments, his ideas waxing increasingly ambitious as the new tools and methods from his lab merged with the contemporary swell of computer mediation, all of it on the path to Big Other's global ubiquity. Pentland articulated his ambitions for the capabilities and objectives of this new milieu in a series of papers, published primarily between 2011 and 2014. But one remarkable 2011 essay, of which he is the sole author, stands out. Society's Nervous System: Building Effective Government, Energy, and Public Health Systems. Pentland begins the report by announcing the institutional bona fides of this work. Drawing on a unique, multi-year collaboration with the heads of major IT, wireless, hardware, health, and financial firms, as well as the heads of American, EU, and other regulatory organizations, and a variety of NGOs, a footnote here indicates the World Economic Forum, I describe the potential for pervasive and mobile sensing and computing over the next decade. From there, his reasoning leaps across a range of inferences to stitch together a crucial rationale for a totalistic society constructed, sustained, and directed by instrumentarian power. The initial premise is reasonable enough. Industrial age technology once revolutionized the world with reliable systems for water, food, waste, energy, transportation, police, healthcare, education, and so forth. But these systems are now hopelessly old, centralized, obsolete, and unsustainable. New digital systems are required that must be integrated, holistic, responsive, dynamic, and self-regulating. We need a radical rethinking of society's systems. We must create a nervous system for humanity that maintains the stability of our society's systems throughout the globe. Referring to the progress of ubiquitous computational sensing devices able to govern complex machine processes and information flows, Pentland observes that the sensing technologies necessary for this nervous system are already in place. Even in 2011, Pentland understood that the basic contours of Big Other were up and running, describing it as a world-spanning living organism in which wireless traffic systems, security sensors, and especially mobile telephone networks are combining to become intelligent reactive systems with sensors serving as their eyes and ears. The evolution will continue at a quickening speed. Devices will have more sensors. But Pentland saw a problem. Although ubiquitous technologies are well on the way to solving the technical challenges of a global nervous system, Big Other will not be complete until it also understands human behavior on a global scale. What is missing are the dynamic models of demand and reaction, along with an architecture that guarantees safety, stability, and efficiency. The models required must describe human demand and reactions, since humans are at the core of all of these systems. The necessary observations are observations of individual behavior. Pentland had identified a dangerous void, which foreshadows the profound shift that Nadella extolled to Microsoft developers in 2017 when he said, "People and their relationship with other people is now a first-class thing in the cloud." People would have to become part of Big Other's purview, lest they fall prey to incorrect behavior. Society's safety, stability, and efficiency hang in the balance. Fortunately, Pentland informs us, the instruments and methods to capture behavioral surplus for reality mining are uniquely suited to answer this call. For the first time in history, the majority of humanity is linked. As a consequence, our mobile wireless infrastructure can be reality mined in order to monitor our environments and plan the development of our society. Reality mining of the digital breadcrumbs left behind as we go about our daily lives offers potential for creating remarkable second-by-second models of group dynamics and reactions over extended periods of time. In short, we now have the capacity to collect and analyze data about people with a breadth and depth that was previously inconceivable. In a style reminiscent of Larry Page's rejection of old laws, Pentland is equally critical of a range of concepts and frameworks inherited from the Enlightenment and political economics. Pentland insists that the old social categories of status, class, education, race, gender, and generation are obsolete as irrelevant as the energy, food, and water systems that he wants to replace. Those categories describe societies through the lens of history, power, and politics. But Pentland prefers populations to societies, statistics to meaning, and computation to law. He sees the stratification of the population coded not by race, income, occupation, or gender, but rather by behavior patterns that produce behavior subgroups and a new behavior demographics that can predict disease, financial risk, consumer preferences, and political views with between 5 and 10 times the accuracy of the standard measures. A final question is urgently posed: how to get the humans in these systems to participate in the plan? His answers do not lie in persuasion or education, but in behavioral modification. He says we need new predictive theories of human decision-making, as well as incentive mechanism design, an idea that is comparable to Skinner's schedules of reinforcement. Regarding how to get humans to follow the plan, Pentland offers the principle of social influence to explain the design mechanisms through which millions of human beings can be herded toward the guaranteed outcomes of safety, stability, and efficiency. He refers to his own studies, in which the problems of industry and government can largely be explained by the pattern of information transfer, especially how people influence and mimic one another. This notion of social influence is a significant piece in Pentland's puzzle that anticipates a great deal of what is to come. Pentland understands that Big Other is not only an architecture that monitors and controls things. Big Other's instrumentation and data flows also make people mutually visible to one another, from the updates on your breakfast to the population flows in cities. Back in 2011, Pentland enthused, "Revolutionary new infrastructures are providing us with a God's eye view of ourselves. The aim is a computer-mediated society where our mutual visibility becomes the habitat in which we attune to one another, producing social patterns based on imitation that can be manipulated for confluence, just as the logic of the machine hive suggests." Regarding incentives, Pentland outlines a principle of social efficiency, which means that participation must provide value to the individual, but also to the system as a whole. For the sake of this wholeness, it is believed each of us will surrender to a totally measured life of instrumentarian order. Sounding ever so much like Eric Schmidt and Larry Page, with their silky promises of Google's all-knowing preemptive magic, Pentland believes that what we stand to lose is more than compensated for by the social rewards of efficient corporations and governments and the individual rewards that are simply magic, as he baldly appeals to second modernity stress. For society, the hope is that we can use this new in-depth understanding of individual behavior to increase the efficiency and responsiveness of industries and governments. For individuals, the attraction is the possibility of a world where everything is arranged for your convenience. Your health checkup is magically scheduled just as you begin to get sick. The bus comes just as you get to the bus stop, and there is never a line of waiting people at City Hall. As these new abilities become refined by the use of more sophisticated statistical models and sensor capabilities, we could well see the creation of a quantitative, predictive science of human organizations and human society. 3. The principles of an instrumentarian society. Pentland's theory of instrumentarian society came to full flower in his 2014 book, Social Physics, in which his tools and methods are integrated into an expansive vision of our futures in a data-driven instrumentarian society governed by computation. Pentland transforms Skinner's fusty, odd utopia into something that sounds sophisticated, magical, and plausible, largely because it resonates with the waves of applied utopistics that wash over our lives each day. In completing Skinner, Pentland fashions more than an updated portrait of a behaviorist utopia. He outlines the principles of a full-blown instrumentarian society based on the pervasive outfitting and measurement of human behavior for the purposes of modification, control, and, in light of surveillance capitalism's commercial dominance of the networked sphere, profit. Pentland insists that social phenomena are really just aggregations of billions of small transactions between individuals. This is a key point because it turns out that, in order for social physics to replace the old ways of thinking, total knowledge of these billions of small things is required. Big data give us a chance to view society in all its complexity through the millions of networks of person-to-person exchanges. If we had a God's eye, an all-seeing view, then we could potentially arrive at a true understanding of how society works and take steps to fix our problems. Pentland is sanguine on this point. Total knowledge is within reach. As he states, in just a few short years, we are likely to have incredible rich data available about the behavior of virtually all of humanity on a continuous basis. The data mostly already exists. The right to the future tense, and with it, social trust, authority, and politics, is surrendered to Big Other and the transcendent computational systems that rule society under the watchful eye of a group that Pentland calls We. He never defines this we, which imposes an us-them relationship, introducing the exclusivity of the shadow text and its one-way mirror. It is an omission that haunts his text. Does it refer to the priesthood of data scientists like Pentland? The priesthood in collaboration with the owners of the means of behavior modification? The theory aims to establish laws of social behavior comparable to laws of physics, and Pentland introduces two such laws that, as he says, determine the success of every social organism. The first is the quality of the idea flow, characterized by exploration to find new ideas and engagement to coordinate behavior around the best ideas. The second is social learning, in which people imitate one another until new ideas become population-wide habits. Social learning is defined as a mathematical relationship derived from how an entity's state impacts other entities' states and vice versa. Pentland notes that social learning is rooted in statistical physics and machine learning. The social hive is meant to reproduce the machine hive, and to this end, Pentland advocates methods by which social learning can be accelerated and shaped by social pressure. The scientific aims of Pentland's social physics depend upon a tightly integrated set of new social norms and individual adaptations, which I summarize here as five overarching principles that describe the social relations of an instrumentarian society. These principles echo Skinner's social theory of a behaviorally controlled society, in which knowledge replaces freedom. In exploring each of the five, I compare Pentland's statements to Skinner's own formulations on these topics. As we shall see, Skinner's once reviled thinking now defines this frontier of instrumentarian power. 1. Behavior for the greater good. Skinner had emphasized the need for an urgent shift to a collective perspective and values. The intentional design of a culture and the control of human behavior it implies are essential if the human species is to continue to develop, he wrote in Beyond Freedom and Dignity. The imperative to shift human behavior toward the greater good was already clear in Walden 2, where Fraser, its protagonist, asserts, "The fact is, we not only can control human behavior, we must." Ultimately, this challenge was understood as an engineering problem. And what are the techniques, the engineering practices that will shape the behavior of the members of a group so that they will function smoothly for the benefit of all? Fraser asks. Skinner advocated, via Fraser, that the virtue of a planned society is to keep intelligence on the right track for the good of society rather than of the intelligent individual. It does this by making sure that the individual will not forget his personal stake in the welfare of society. Pentland understands instrumentarian society as an historical turning point comparable to the invention of the printing press or the internet. It means that for the first time in human history, we will have the data required to really know ourselves and understand how society evolves. Pentland says that continuous streams of data about human behavior mean that everything from traffic to energy use to disease to street crime will be accurately forecast, enabling a world without war or financial crashes, in which infectious disease is quickly detected and stopped, in which energy, water, and other resources are no longer wasted, and in which governments are part of the solution rather than part of the problem. This new collective intelligence operates to serve the greater good as we learn to act in a coordinated manner based on social universals. Great leaps in healthcare, transportation, energy, and safety are all possible, Pentland writes, but he laments the obstacles to these achievements. The main barriers are privacy concerns and the fact that we don't yet have any consensus around the trade-offs between personal and social values. Like Skinner, he is emphatic that these attachments to a bygone era of imperfect knowledge threaten to undermine the prospect of a perfectly engineered future society. We cannot ignore the public goods that such a nervous system could provide. Pentland avoids the question, whose greater good? How is the greater good determined when surveillance capitalism owns the machines and the means of behavioral modification? Goodness arrives already oriented toward the interests of the owners of the means of behavioral modification and the clients whose guaranteed outcomes they seek to achieve. The greater good is someone's, but it may not be ours. 2. Plans replace politics. Skinner yearned for the computational capabilities that would perfect behavioral prediction and control, enabling perfect knowledge to supplant politics as the means of collective decision-making. In spite of his pre-digital limitations, Skinner had no difficulty in conceptualizing the necessary requirements for species salvation as a new communal science. As Fraser explains, we know almost nothing about the special capacities of the group. The individual, no matter how extraordinary, can't think thoughts big enough. Smooth operations leave no room for unreasonable or unintentional outcomes, and Skinner viewed the creative and often messy conflicts of politics, especially democratic politics, as a source of friction that threatens the rational efficiency of the community as a single, high-functioning superorganism. He laments our inclination to try to change things with political action, and he endorses what he perceives as a widespread loss of faith in democracy. In Walden 2, Fraser insists that, I don't like the despotism of ignorance. I don't like the despotism of neglect, of irresponsibility, the despotism of accident even. And I don't like the despotism of democracy. Capitalism and socialism are equally tainted by their shared emphasis on economic growth, which breeds overconsumption and pollution. Skinner is intrigued by the Chinese system, but rejects it on the grounds of the bloody revolution that any effort to convert Westerners would entail. Fortunately, Skinner concludes in the preface to Walden 2, there is another possibility. This option is Skinner's version of a behaviorist society that provides a way in which political action is to be avoided. In Walden 2, a plan replaces politics, overseen by a non-competitive group of planners who eschew power in favor of the dispassionate administration of the schedules of reinforcement aimed at the greater good. Planners exercise unique control over society, but only because that control is necessary for the proper functioning of the community. Like Skinner, Pentland argues that computational truth must necessarily replace politics as the basis for instrumentarian governance. We recall Nadella's enthusiasm over persons and relationships as objects in the cloud, When considering Pentland's allegiance to the notion that certainty machines will displace earlier forms of governance, having a mathematical, predictive science of society that includes both individual differences and the relationships between individuals, Pentland writes, has the potential to dramatically change the way government officials, industry managers, and citizens think and act. Pentland worries that our political economic constructs, such as market and class, hail from an old, slow world of the 18th and 19th centuries. The new light-speed hyperconnected world leaves no time for the kind of rational deliberation and face-to-face negotiation and compromise that characterized the social milieu in which such political concepts originated. We can no longer think of ourselves as only individuals reaching carefully considered decisions. We must include the dynamic social effects that influence our individual decisions and drive economic bubbles, political revolutions, and the internet economy. The velocity of instrumentarian society leaves us no time to get our bearings, and that speed is repurposed here as a moral imperative, demanding that we relinquish individual agency to the automated systems that can keep up the pace in order to quickly perceive and impose correct answers for the greater good. There is no room for politics in this instrumentarian society because politics means establishing and asserting our bearings. Individual moral and political bearings are a source of friction that wastes precious time and diverts behavior from confluence. Instead of politics, markets, classes, and so on, Pentland reduces society to his laws of social physics, a reincarnation of Skinner's communal science. Indeed, Pentland regards his work as the practical foundation of a new computational theory of behavior capable of producing a causal theory of social structure, a mathematical explanation of why society reacts as it does and how these reactions may or may not solve human problems. These new mathematical analyses not only reveal the deep mechanisms of social interactions, Skinner's special capacities of the group, but also combine with our newly acquired massive amounts of behavior data in order to reveal the patterns of causality that make it possible to engineer better social systems, all of it based on unprecedented instrumentation. Computation thus replaces the political life of the community as the basis for governance. The depth and breadth of instrumentation make it possible, Pentland says, to calculate idea flow, social network structure, the degree of social influence between people, and even individual susceptibilities to new ideas. Most important, instrumentation makes it possible for those with the God view to modify others' behavior. The data provide a reliable prediction of how changing any of these variables will change the performance of all the people in the network, and thus achieve the optimum performance of Skinner's superorganism. This mathematics of idea flow is the basis for Pentland's version of a plan that dictates the targets and objectives of behavior change. Human behavior must be herded and penned within the parameters of the plan, just as behavior at Nadella's construction site was continuously and automatically molded to policy parameters. Pentland calls this tuning the network. Tuners fill the role of Pentland's we. He says, for example, that cities can be understood as idea engines, and that we can use the equations of social physics to begin to tune them to perform better. Like Skinner's planners, Pentland's tuners oversee pesky anomalies that represent leakage from an old world of ignorance mistaken as freedom. Tuners tweak Big Other's operations to preemptively steer such misguided behavior back into the fold of harmonious confluence and optimum performance for the greater good of whomever or whatever owns the machines that perform the math and pays the tuners to decipher and impose its parameters. Pentland provides an example from one of his own living labs. This mathematically derived concept of idea flow allows us to tune social networks in order to make better decisions and achieve better results. Within the eToro digital finance world, we have found that we can shape the flows of ideas between people by providing small incentives or nudges to individuals, thus causing isolated traders to engage more with others, and those who were too interconnected to engage less. 3. Social pressure for harmony. In the community of Walden 2, reinforcement is precisely orchestrated to eliminate emotions that threaten cooperation. Only productive and strengthening emotions, joy and love, are allowed. Feelings of sorrow and hate, and the high-voltage excitements of anger, fear, and rage are considered wasteful and dangerous threats to the needs of modern life. Any form of distinction between persons undermines the harmony of the whole and its capacity to bend to collective purpose. Fraser acknowledges that you cannot coerce people into doing the right thing. The solution is far more subtle and sophisticated, based upon scientifically calibrated schedules of reinforcement. Instead, you have to set up certain behavioral processes which will lead the individual to design his own good conduct. We call that sort of thing self-control. But don't be misled. The control always rests in the last analysis in the hands of society. Pentland's idea is comparable. The social physics approach to getting everyone to cooperate is social network incentives, his version of reinforcement. With such incentives, he explains, we focus on changing the connections between people rather than focusing on getting people individually to change their behavior. We can leverage those exchanges to generate social pressure for change. Social media is critical to establishing these tuning capabilities, Pentland believes, because this is the environment in which social pressure can best be controlled, directed, manipulated, and scaled. In Pentland's view, Facebook already exemplifies these dynamics. Its contagion experiments reveal active mastery of the ability to manipulate human empathy and attachment with tuning techniques such as priming and suggestion. Indeed, Pentland finds Facebook's contagion experiments particularly enlightening, seeing all sorts of practical insights in their complexities. For example, in the corporation's 61 million person voting experiment, Pentland sees confirmation that social pressure can be effectively instrumentalized in social networks, especially among people with strong ties. The knowledge that our face-to-face friends have already voted generated enough social pressure that it convinced people to vote. With this knowledge and more like it, Pentland's we, the tuners, will be able to activate the right incentives. That Pentland's we is able to generate social pressure for change reflects his understanding of the superorganism. The God view persuades him that assessing human action really is comparable to counting beavers. We can observe humans in just the same way we observe apes or bees and derive rules of behavior, reaction, and learning. In all of these populations, the collective exerts pressure on each organism to go with the flow, stay with the herd, return to the hive, and take flight with the flock. Idea flows mimic the pattern of the machine hive. The edge conflates with the hub, identity yields to synchrony, and the parts dissolve in the whole. He writes, I believe that we can think of each stream of ideas as a swarm or collective intelligence flowing through time, with all the humans in it learning from each other's experiences in order to jointly discover the patterns of preferences and habits of action that best suit the surrounding physical and social environment. This is counter to the way most modern Westerners understand themselves, which is as rational individuals. People who know what they want and who decide for themselves what actions to take in order to accomplish their goals. The shift from society to swarm and from individuals to organisms is the cornerstone upon which the structure of an instrumentarian society rests. Pentland ignores the role of empathy in emulation because empathy is a felt experience that is not subject to the observable metrics required for computational governance. Instead, Pentland subscribes to the label homo imitans to convey that it is mimicry, not empathy, and certainly not politics, which defines human existence. The term itself derives from studies of infant learning, but for Pentland, it is a fitting explanation of all human behavior all the time, an assertion, like Skinner's, that control always rests with society. The largest single factor driving adoption of new behaviors, he writes, is the behavior of peers. Because we are born to imitate one another, Pentland argues, the whole species is attuned to social pressure as an efficient means of behavioral modification. This model of human learning is a throwback to bees and apes, but also a forward pass to the machine hive. Machines do not learn by empathy. Learning is automatically updated in a lockstep progression of collective intelligence. 4. Applied Utopistics. Both Skinner and Pentland believe in the authority of the utopianists to impose their plan. Instrumentarian society is a planned society, produced through total control of the means of behavioral modification. Neither Skinner's planners nor Pentland's tuners shrink from their responsibility to wield the power that shapes the superorganism. Skinner never lost faith in the social vision of Walden II. He understood utopia as a total social environment in which all parts work in harmony toward collective aims. The home does not conflict with the school or the street. Religion does not conflict with government. And if planned economies, benevolent dictatorships, perfectionistic societies, and other utopian ventures have failed, we must remember that unplanned, undictated, and unperfected cultures have failed too. A failure is not always a mistake. It may simply be the best one can do under the circumstances. The real mistake is to stop trying. Pentland similarly conceives his social physics as both comprehensive and necessary. Nothing short of its totalistic rendering and control of all human behavior will serve civilization in a hyper-connected future. And there is no sign of hesitation to assert computational governance over the whole domain of human endeavor for the sake of a collective destiny. The politics and economics of that destiny, which is to say the authority and power that found and sustain it, do not require specification because the machines and their math transcend these once fundamental coordinates of human society. Instead, computation reveals the truth hidden in the data and therefore determines what is correct. A new social class of tuners exercises perpetual vigilance to cure human nature of its weaknesses by ensuring that populations are tuned, herded, and conditioned to produce the most efficient behaviors. The tools of social network incentives are all that is required to establish new norms of behavior, rather than relying on regulatory penalties and market competition. Given the well-known shortcomings of human nature, social efficiency is a desirable goal. Our focus should be on providing the idea flow required for individuals to make correct decisions and develop useful behavioral norms. Finally, like Skinner, Pentland rejects the notion that his imagined data-driven society is merely a utopian fantasy, insisting instead that it is not only practical and feasible, but also a moral imperative in which the benefits to the collective outweigh all other considerations. 5. The death of individuality. Individuality is a threat to instrumentarian society, troublesome friction that sucks energy from collaboration, harmony, and integration. In an article titled The Death of Individuality, Pentland insists that, instead of individual rationality, our society appears to be governed by a collective intelligence that comes from the surrounding flow of ideas and examples. It is time that we dropped the friction of individuals as the unit of rationality and recognized that our rationality is largely determined by the surrounding social fabric. Here again, the behaviorist from Harvard had already sounded the first and most eloquent iteration of this message, elevating the other one and denouncing the autonomous self. In Beyond Freedom and Dignity, Skinner freely displayed his contempt for this most transcendent ideal of the Sartrean age. The will to will oneself into first-person voice and action. Skinner argued that the differences between humans and other species are greatly exaggerated, and he would have found Pentland entirely justified in his rejection of the individual in favor of the distant computer-mediated gaze. Beavers or people, the variance hardly matters once we shed the destructive fiction of individual autonomy. The surrender of the individual to manipulation by the planners clears the way for a safe and prosperous future built on the forfeit of freedom for knowledge. Skinner was unrelenting on this point. What is being abolished is autonomous man, the inner man, the homunculus, the possessing demon, the man defended by the literatures of freedom and dignity. His abolition has long been overdue. He has been constructed from our ignorance, and as our understanding increases, the very stuff of which he is composed vanishes. And it must do so if it is to prevent the abolition of the human species. To man qua man, we readily say good riddance. Only by dispossessing him can we turn from the inferred to the observed, from the miraculous to the natural, from the inaccessible to the manipulable. The long overdue death of individuality finally dispels the distracting fictions that fetishize the notions of freedom and dignity. The 20th century behaviorist from Harvard and the 21st century data scientist from MIT agree that the notion of free will is but another unfortunate hangover from a dark age when science had not yet demonstrated that, as Skinner says, we live under the control of a social environment that millions of others have constructed. The blunt behaviorist delivers his final truth. A person does not act upon the world acts upon him. In a lecture at Google that garnered enthusiastic applause, Pentland flattered the audience by signaling that the digital cognoscenti will easily accept the obsolescence of the individual as a necessary fate. What about free will? He asked the audience in Mountain View. That may not have occurred to you, but that's the traditional thing to ask. He went on to explain that most human behavior, from political views to spending choices to the music that people listen to, is predicted by what's cool to do, exposure to what other people do. Many people reject this idea, he noted, because it's not the rhetoric in our society. Then he assured the Googlers, you guys are the last people to be saying this to, because you guys are like the best and smartest in the world. For such people as these, Pentland appeared to say, the death of the individual is yesterday's news. So you've heard about rational individuals, and everybody rags on the rational part. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to rag on the individual part, okay? Because I don't think we are individuals. What we desire, the ways we learn to go about doing it, what's valuable, are consensual things, individual incentives. That's part of this mindset that comes from the 1700s. The action is not between our ears. The action is in our social networks, okay? We are a social species. Pentland's vision is Skinner's vision, now standing on the shoulders of Big Other with its big data and its big math. These are the resources of the smart machines required to divine the correct answers. Such is Pentland's resonance with Skinner's social theory that without ever mentioning the behaviorist's name, a later section of Pentland's book is titled Social Physics versus Free Will and Dignity. If we are to annihilate and bury the individual as an existential reality, philosophical idea, and political ideal, then this death should at least merit the gravitas of an ancient Greek funerary ritual. The existence of the individual is, after all, an achievement carved from millennia of human suffering and sacrifice. Instead, Pentland brushes it aside as just another debugging of humanity's computer code, a much-needed upgrade to the outdated software that is the long human story. Unlike Skinner, though, Pentland is careful to round the square, perhaps in the hope of evading a withering review by the likes of Noam Chomsky. In The Case Against B.F. Skinner, as you may recall from Chapter 10, Chomsky famously denounced Skinner as vacuous and devoid of scientific content, and he assessed the work as burdened with misconceptions that virtually guarantee failure. Pentland sidesteps the risks of Skinner's Jeremiad by taking a softer tone. Some people react negatively to the phrase social physics because they feel that it implies that people are machines without free will and without the ability to move independently of our role in society. Like Meyer, Pentland acknowledges that humans have a capacity for independent thought, but insists that social physics does not need to try to account for it. As Pentland sees it, the problem is not that independent thought is omitted from the picture, but rather that internal, unobservable thought processes are just friction that will occasionally emerge to defeat our best social physics models. Fortunately, the models are not really in danger because the data tell us that deviations from our regular social patterns occur only a few percent of the time. The autonomous individual is but a statistical blip, a slip of the pen that is easily overridden in the march toward confluent action and someone's greater good. In this vein, Professor Pentland does not ignore issues like privacy and social trust. He actively advocates solutions to these problems, but the solutions he pursues are already tailored to the intensification of a data-driven instrumentarian society. Pentland's approach recalls the early conviction of his former doctoral student, Rosalind Picard, that societal challenges are not insurmountable, that new technical solutions will resolve any problems, and that safeguards can be developed. 2 decades later, Picard's view had a darker cast, but Pentland expresses little trace of doubt. For example, Pentland works with influential institutions like the World Economic Forum to craft a new deal on data that favors individual ownership of personal information, but does not question the ubiquitous rendition of such personal information in the first instance. Data ownership, he believes, will create financial incentives for participation in a market-oriented instrumentarian society. Like Skinner, Pentland assumes that the sheer weight of incentives and ubiquitous connection, monitoring, and tuning will eventually wear down older sensibilities, such as the interest in privacy. The New Deal gives customers a stake in the new data economy. That will bring first greater stability, and then eventually greater profitability as people become more comfortable sharing data. In Pentland's view of data ownership, certainty machines like blockchain, which relies on complex encryption and algorithms to create a decentralized, tamper-proof database, are commandeered to bypass social trust. He advocates systems that live everywhere and nowhere, protecting and processing the data of millions of people and executing on millions of internet computers. One important study of Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency that relies on blockchain, suggests that such machine solutions both express and contribute to the general erosion of the social fabric in ways that are both consistent with instrumentarianism and further pave the way for its success. Information scholars Primavera De Filippi and Benjamin Lovelock conclude that, contrary to popular belief, Bitcoin is neither anonymous nor privacy-friendly. Anyone with a copy of the blockchain can see the history of all Bitcoin transactions. Every transaction ever done on the Bitcoin network can be traced back to its origin. Such systems rely on perfect information, but the kinds of coordination processes that build open democratic societies, such as social trust or loyalty, are expunged in favor of a profoundly market-driven approach. Like Varian, Pentland does not acknowledge the social and political implications of such systems, which are in any case irrelevant to an instrumentarian future in which democracy and social trust are superseded by the certainty machines, their priests, and their owners. Surveillance capitalism grew to dominance during the years that Pentland has argued for his New Deal, even as it benefited from his theoretical and commercial innovations. During those same years, as we have seen, Picard's effective computing fell to the surveillance paradigm. Nevertheless, Professor Pentland is sanguine that surveillance capitalism can easily be pushed aside by market forces, despite its concentrations of knowledge, rights, and power, its unilateral control of the shadow text, and its dominant position in the division of learning in society. It simply requires that creative business people harness the will of consumers in order to construct a value proposition better than the current steal-all-your-data paradigm. We've just got to push on through. Power, politics, and law do not enter into the equation, presumably because they are already obsolete in the social vision under construction here. 4. The Third Modernity of the Hive. It is no surprise that capitalism shapes social relations. A century ago, it was the new means of mass production that fashioned mass society in its image. Today, surveillance capitalism offers a new template for our future. The machine hive in which our freedom is forfeit to perfect knowledge administered for others' profit. This is an unheralded social revolution that is difficult to discern in the fog of utopian rhetoric and high-speed applied utopistics conjured by leading surveillance capitalists and the many communities of practice, from developers to data scientists, that enable and sustain the dominance of the commercial surveillance project. Surveillance capitalists work hard to camouflage their purpose as they master the uses of instrumentarian power to shape our behavior while evading our awareness. This is why Google conceals the operations that turn us into the objects of its search, and Facebook distracts us from the fact that our beloved connections are essential to the profit and power that flow from its network ubiquity and totalistic knowledge. Pentland's experimental work and theoretical analyses perform an important political and social function in piercing this fog. They map the tactical and conceptual pathways of instrumentarian society that place the means of behavior modification at the heart of this social system, founded on the scientific and technological control of collective behavior and administered by a specialist class. In China, the state appears determined to own this complex, but in the West, it is largely owned and operated by surveillance capital. Instrumentarian society defines the ultimate institutionalization of a pathological division of learning. Who knows? Who decides? Who decides who decides? Here, too, the comparison with China is useful. An abnormal division of learning marks both China and the West. In China, the state vies with its surveillance capitalists for control. In the U.S. and Europe, the state works with and through the surveillance capitalists to accomplish its aims. It is the private companies who have scaled the rock face to command the heights. They sit at the pinnacle of the division of learning, having amassed unprecedented and exclusive wealth, information, and expertise on the strength of their dispossession of our behavior. They are making their dreams come true. Not even Skinner could have aspired to this condition. The social principles of instrumentarianism's third modernity represent a stark break with the legacies and ideals of the liberal order. Instrumentarian society is a topsy-turvy funhouse mirror world in which everything that we have cherished is turned upside down and inside out. Pentland doubles down on the illiberality of behavioral economics. In his hands, the ideology of human frailty is not merely cause for contempt, but a justification for the death of individuality. Self-determination and autonomous moral judgment, generally regarded as the bulwark of civilization, are recast as a threat to collective well-being. Social pressure, well known to psychologists for its dangerous production of obedience and conformity, is elevated to the highest good as the means to extinguish the unpredictable influences of autonomous thought and moral judgment. These new architectures feed on our fellow feeling to exploit and ultimately to suffocate the individually sensed inwardness that is the wellspring of personal autonomy and moral judgment. The first-person voice, the will to will, and the sense of an inalienable right to the future tense. That we vibrate to one another should be a life-enhancing fact, but this third modernity amplifies our mutual vibration to an excruciating pitch. In the milieu of total instrumentation, it is less that we resonate to one another's presence, and more that we drown in its inescapability. Instrumentarianism reimagines society as a hive to be monitored and tuned for guaranteed outcomes, but this tells us nothing of the lived experience of its members. What are the consequences of life lived in the hive, where one is perceived as an other to the surveillance capitalists, designers, and tuners who impose their instruments and methods? How and when do we each become an organism among organisms, to ourselves and to one another, and with what result? The answers to these questions are not all guesswork. We can begin by asking our children. Without knowing it, we sent the least formed and most vulnerable among us to scout the hive and settle its wilderness. Now their messages are filtering in from the frontier.